welcome to Shakyo.com Presents Movie Night. My name is Rudy Obias.
And I am Perry Nemiroff.
And yes, we've been kind of on a break for the past 2 weeks. I was kind of on vacation. And so we didn't have an episode last week. So we're kind of going to catch up on the stuff from last week and somewhat this week and kind of do the summer wrap up of what was the best and what was the worst of the summer. So yeah, let's get started. So movie that came out last week, The Help. This movie is I don't know if it's if I'm surprised that this movie is doing well. I mean, this movie is based on a bestseller, and it's doing very, very well, and most likely will do very well this week as well.
Yeah, I have I just posted my box office predictions, and I put it at number one for the weekend. Everyone seems to absolutely love it. I mean, I personally loved it. It's getting great reviews, one from myself and word of mouth. This thing's going to do awesome.
Yeah. What? I missed the press screening of this, and so I actually caught this yesterday, and it was a Wednesday afternoon, and it was pretty full, surprisingly, a pretty full screening on a Wednesday afternoon, and I must say that I was really surprised how much I liked this movie. I kind of went into this movie thinking for some reason that this was a comedy. You know, this was going to be a little bit more playful than what was presented. But actually, it's not generally a comedy. I mean, there's very humorous moments in this film. But overall, this is a pretty dramatic film.
Yeah, with a really testy topic, too. I think it's more of like the tone and the presentation and the color palette of it. It's pretty bright, and some of the characters are pretty playful, especially Jessica Chastain's character. That part's a lot of fun in the beginning.
Yeah, I actually did not even recognize Jessica Chastain, who was in earlier this year, the Tree of Life, and she's in this film playing this, I guess what would be considered new money into this high society of Southern living, and just for me, completely 180 from how she was in The Tree of Life.
I still have yet to see The Tree of Life, but I did think she was absolutely fantastic in this. I'm seeing her in Take Shelter in a week or two, so that'll give me something to compare it to. But she is not front and center in the movie, but still manages to, you know, make one heck of an impact, and even pull, I believe it's Mike Vogel that plays her husband in it, and even pull him into it too and give him a really memorable moment.
Yeah, I think my biggest takeaway from this film are the performances from practically the entire cast. Every moment in this movie, for me, kind of felt like this could be their Oscar clip, or this is kind of the showcase of amazing acting. Straight down the board from, obviously, Viola Davis, who is so wonderful, wonderful in this film, just very moving and touching. Even to Bryce Dallas Howard, who kind of plays this really despicable, evil type of, maybe a little cartoonish type of character. I found her performance to be just as riveting or moving and compelling.
Even though she's a little on the cartoonish side, she's not just your average movie villain. Like, she's really terrible in this. Some of the things she does are, God, just heartless and beyond anything you would get from a movie like this. But yeah, Viola Davis is absolutely fantastic. Emma Stone is unbelievable in this. And, you know, she's got that innate charm to her, which really works with this role. And everyone works really well together, too. Like, when I just kept thinking, when the three of them are together, it makes you so intensely want to be with them and just hang out with them. And something like that is what keeps a movie that's 2 hours plus long.
Oh, yeah.
All the time. And makes you want to go back and watch it again.
Yeah, this movie is 2 hours and 30 minutes, actually. 2.5 hour long movie. And I can actually kind of feel the weight of it a little bit, but I felt that the film was definitely enjoyable, that I was willing to go on this long journey with them, but it kind of did have to feel that long, and the more time I spent with these characters, the more I love them, and just the way this movie ends is kind of bittersweet in a way. I mean, it's not a very, if you think about it, a happy ending, but it's kind of like a new beginning for one of the characters in it.
So appropriate, though. I feel like everyone would be feeling a bit cheated if it ended really bad or really great. It just wouldn't have been natural.
Yeah, I mean, have you read the book that this is based on?
I have not, and I actually have a pretty big obsession now with, I don't really read many books at all, but I will read things that are being adapted to film, and this is one I missed.
I used to work at a Borders bookstore in New York City, and this was definitely one of the best sellers. We really couldn't keep copies of this on the shelf, and wow, seeing this movie, it kind of makes me want to read the book, but from what I've heard, it's pretty much the same from the book and the movie. Going back to Bryce Dallas Howard's character, Hilly Holbrook, in this film, she is a bit cartoonish. She kind of plays like a Cruella De Vil, but racist. And I think like the worst part about her character, I mean, Bryce Dallas Howard is really good in this movie. She's the type of person who doesn't consider herself racist, but she is very much so a racist. And that, you know, that got an actual, you know, a lot of head shaking during during the movie from a lot of people when she like presented the fact that she wasn't racist.
That's the scariest part, is when someone so deeply believes in all of the wrong that they do. And yeah, I mean, not to spoil anything, but I don't know how I feel about her in the end either.
The way it ends for her character in the movie, it is kind of, I mean, I don't want to say justified at all, but she definitely get Viola Davis's character, Eveline, gets her comeuppance by confronting Bryce Dallas Howard's character, which was definitely satisfying, but it was definitely moving. Like, you know, this whole year, I don't think I've ever felt so emotionally attached or compelled during any movie I've seen this year, and I've seen quite a bit of movies. Perry, do you think this movie's getting like a lot of Oscar buzz already? Do you see this getting nominated for Best Picture? I think at the very least, all the actresses in this film are most likely, I mean, I would love to see them get nominated.
As much as I want to see everyone in this film and the film itself get nominated, you know, it's August, and remember what happened with even if they do get nominated, remember what happened with 127 Hours. Mm-hmm. It was like the biggest thing when it came out, which was it was closer to award season. It was early October, and then I feel like by the time the Oscars came around, everyone kind of forgot about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, this movie's probably going to come out on DVD and Blu-ray towards the end of the year anyway, so that could probably generate a little bit more buzz. But, I mean, for Viola Davis to be nominated for Best Actress in a movie, that would just be so wonderful for me.
Yeah, I'd very much like to see this movie get its due credit. I really appreciate things that are both so well done and so incredibly enjoyable that I would watch it a second time. And sure, I'm giving out, you know, high grades on my reviews all the time, but then when I think about it twice, am I going to watch some of these movies again? Probably not, but I still can recognize a well-done movie. This is just the entire package, and it's an experience you will 110% want to relive again.
Yeah, I agree. Listeners, please watch this movie. especially it's coming out during the summer, and you know, we really don't get these types of films during the summer, and I think that's a good thing that we're getting something like this during the summer season. Speaking of the summer season, it's kind of coming to an end. I don't think any more big movies. I think the last big movie that came out was probably Rise of the Planet of the Apes and the surprise hit of The Help. Perry, what do you think, what was your favorite movie this past summer, the one that, you know, stayed with you the most now that summer 2011 is coming to a close?
I can't pinpoint just one, but I'm definitely going to say The Help. The Help is part of the group. I have to give a ton of credit to Attack the Block. It's one I'm never going to forget and one that I'm absolutely dying to own on DVD.
Oh, yeah.
Going back to May, I really thoroughly enjoyed June, actually. Came out the first week in June, I think, X-Men First Class. That was probably one of the big superhero movies that I enjoyed the most. And then Thor too. Thor was right up there with X-Men. But after that, all the superhero movies and you know, Transformers, just massive disappointments.
So you weren't a fan of Green Lantern?
Yeah, I'm going to have to say no for that one. Oh, and Bridesmaids. Bridesmaids is technically a summer movie. Came out the second week in May.
Were you disappointed with Bridesmaids?
No. That goes in the first category. Absolutely loved it. Easily the best comedy of the year.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And the biggest comedy of the summer or the year so far is definitely Bridesmaids. And with the disappointment of The Hangover 2 and I guess the mixed response from Horrible Bosses, definitely Bridesmaids is great. I think my favorite movie of the summer I had two favorite movies of the summer that are complete polar opposites. One being Attack the Block, which I definitely agree is with you that I can't wait to get that on DVD and Blu-ray, and I actually want to see it again while it's still in theaters, which will mark the fifth time that I've seen this movie. And also on the other end of it, Terrence Malick's The Tree of Life. I absolutely loved that movie, and that really played to my art house sensibility that I have, and that movie is quite an experience, and I was glad that I shared it with practically an empty movie theater, and watching it on the big screen is probably the best way to see a movie like The Tree of Life. I would say my favorite superhero movie of the summer, and we got a lot this summer. I really enjoyed Captain America, and I enjoyed Thor quite a bit. But between the two movies, I think I'm going to go for Captain America because I felt that movie had a better sense of adventure and thrill. But Thor had the humor locked down. But I go with Captain America because I think it had a greater sense of romance. I like that romance better in Captain America than the Natalie Portman, Chris Hemsworth relationship in Thor. Did you see Captain America?
I did, and I had a lot of problems with that one. And funny thing was, out of all the superhero movies this summer, that's the one that I was looking forward to most and that I was complimenting the most just based on its promotional material. And then I was just so disappointed by it. It started off on a bad foot for me because of the digital effect that made Chris Evans look skinnier and smaller.
Yeah.
I did not believe that for a second, unless his back was turned to the camera, and that's the only time where I guess they had a body double there, so it was the only time he was actually a real person, but it did not look real to me at all, which kind of killed the first act of the movie.
I thought it was believable enough. I mean, I'm not going to lie, it did look pretty bad only when I felt when he was shirtless. Like, when he's getting examined by doctors, I felt that CGI just looked, he looked like a bobblehead.
Did you see the movie Metropia?
No. Oh, yeah, yeah. The animated film, right?
Yeah. Do you remember what those characters look like?
Yeah.
He looks like he came straight from that movie.
Except he didn't have big bug eyes creeping me out, I guess. I saw that movie 2 years ago at Tribeca, yeah. I believe. But I think when he had a shirt on, you know, and him in a movie theater, that was believable enough for me, where I did buy into the fact that he was this scrawny do-gooder type of guy. Or even when he's going through the training, the military training at the beginning of the film, I did buy into that. Gladly, that was only like the first 20 minutes of the movie. But when he did become Captain America, you know, I was in for the ride. I had a blast watching that movie. I felt it had a great sense of patriotism and nostalgia. I mean, at the end of the movie, I really wanted to chant USA, USA, USA. So for that, I enjoyed Captain America. I think my biggest disappointment of the summer, though, the movie that, you know, as soon as I left the theater, just left my mind was Cowboys and Aliens. I thought that movie had a lot of potential to be somewhat enjoyable, but at the end of the day, when I left the theater, I just completely forgot about it. Then when I was thinking about it, I was like, wow, that was really disappointing and bad, surprisingly with what kind of people were involved with this movie. Perry, did you get a chance to see Captain America? I mean, Cowboys and Aliens.
I actually did a double feature because I missed both of those because of Comic-Con. So I saw them back to back. I saw Captain America, and then I did the midnight screening of Cowboys and Aliens. And I actually liked Cowboys and Aliens a lot more. I thought it was just, it had a much quicker pace to it. And yeah, it was absolutely ridiculous, but I was completely swept up by the story, the characters, the action, and I had a blast with it. I'm not going to say it's a well-made movie or a well-written movie for that matter, but it was fun.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't even have fun with it. I really liked the first 20 minutes of it when we meet Daniel Craig's character, and he's kind of like this man with no name and no backstory, and him just walking through this town. I really enjoyed that, but as soon as the aliens came into the picture, and then when they started to go on this journey to find the lost people, I thought it kind of fell apart, that it really didn't know what it was trying to be or what it was trying to do, and it just really felt like set pieces that really didn't add up to anything at the end. Thinking about it now, like I feel like I was captured by these aliens, and I am now released, and I have completely amnesia towards the story and the characters because I can't really remember anything that went on in that movie.
Well, you're definitely pinpointing one of the problems. The first act is of a completely different, almost genre and tone as the second act, and either, you know, you make that jump and you're on for the ride, or yeah, you're not that into it.
Yeah. And what else was Green Lantern was definitely disappointing. Not just based on the source material or how weird it was. Actually, I like that it embraced its space opera-ness. I felt that just the storytelling and the filmmaking was just absolutely lazy and poorly put together. Just when you're introducing characters by literally cutting them into the movie without any lead or payoff at all, is just what is this movie? This is really bad. And when people are doing research in a building called Science Building, that's pretty bad too.
I will agree, but I was most miserable in Transformers. In fact, I don't think I've ever been that uncomfortable watching a movie in my life. If I could have gotten up and walked out, I would have in a second. I, within 20 minutes, was incredibly dizzy, nauseous, and had the worst headache of my life when I left.
That's a Michael Bay film.
Oh, and it wasn't even worth it. I got nothing from that. It was just a mashup of nonsensical action.
Yeah.
No more Transformers, please.
Actually, I do think that they're going to make Transformers 4 or reboot the Transformer series, but without Michael Bay. Which could be interesting. I mean, I've been hearing rumors like Neville Dean and Taylor, who've done the Crank series, they might be able to do a Transformers movie. I think that would be interesting and fun. I am a big fan of the Crank movies. But yeah, Transformers, I mean, for me, it was entertaining enough. I mean, I was in awe at least the last 45 minutes of that movie when it was just full-out battle scenes. But overall, I don't know if I could recommend it. But I mean, it did fairly well
for 15 minutes of that 45 minute battle sequence, because all it was the same 15 minutes practically on repeat the entire time.
I think one of the big surprises for me this summer was Harry Potter. I actually enjoyed Harry Potter enough to watch it again. That was the only movie that I watched twice this summer. I mean, except for Attack the Block, which I've seen four times, but Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2, I was actually surprised how much I liked it, and it's a series that finished very well for me. What did you think of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2?
I'm generally a big Harry Potter fan, so I wouldn't say I was surprised that it was good. I really liked it. I ended up rating it very high, but it kind of just fell short of what I wanted. I thought it really could have, you know, played up the emotion a little more. I mean, yeah, it would have borderline melodramatic, but I think after seven films and you're on your eighth, you kind of deserve that, and you really do want to make the audience tear up. And I was surprised after all this time with this big ending, I didn't. But I still enjoyed it. I don't want to sound like I'm knocking it, because, I mean, I believe I gave it an A-. I totally enjoyed it. It just fell short of what I wanted.
I I liked it better than part one. That's for damn sure. And I felt the way that it ended. I mean, I've never read the books or anything, and I actually kind of promised myself when the first movie came out not to read the books until the last movie came out. That was a promise I made to myself 10 years ago, and now I could finally read these books. But I liked the way that it ended. I thought it, you know, it gave a good sense of just a really, not really bittersweet, but just kind of like this melancholy type of ending. And there were parts of it that were kind of flashbacks to the first movie. And for me, I got that that feeling like, wow, this is a series that's been going on for 10, 11 years. And we've seen these kids grow up from being 11-year-old actors to now being 21, 22 years old. And just seeing them grow as actors and seeing the series grow, for me, that's kind of where the emotion lay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I think the biggest surprise for me, though, might have been Final Destination 5. Because after the Final Destination, I had no faith in another movie, and I love this series more than most. I'm a big horror fan, but more than most horror franchises, and they really had a solid, solid comeback. And the ending to this movie, if you're familiar with the others, like, just the way that they put this movie in and make it, you know, they really, like, bring it home and make it feel like it's part of the franchise, whereas that last one, it was completely, like, an obsessive 3D showing. David Ellis's head just got so wrapped up in that extra dimension, and it ruined the concept. It made the concept campy, a gimmick, and nothing worked at all. But this one, nah, the acting's not the greatest, and some of the characters kind of suck, but I mean, I felt right at home watching it, and that's coming from someone who can watch 1, 2, and 3 over and over and over.
I think I've only seen the first one, and I haven't seen any since.
2 and 3 are solid, but you can skip the fourth.
And what was it, the same director that did the fourth one that did this one as well?
No. What is his name? The guy who did this one worked on Stephen Quayle worked with James Cameron on Avatar, so he's had experience with 3D, and I think that really helped, because unlike the last one where all the 3D is, you know, that typical gimmicky, let's throw stuff in your face. Yes,
yeah.
He does it here, and at points it's a little obvious, but throughout most of it, I had forgotten that I had the glasses on. Still, I'm not meaning that, you know, 3D enhanced this experience whatsoever. I still think 3D's crap, and I want it gone, but at least here, it wasn't distracting.
I haven't seen Final Destination 5 yet, and for my rules of seeing a movie like this, I actually have to watch the first four that came before it. But I definitely agree with you about 3D. I mean, I think this summer, there were so many movies that were in 3D more so than last summer, and I gotta say, every time I go to a theater, when I go to one of these screenings and they hand me 3D glasses, I'm just so disappointed. when I saw Harry Potter the second time, the first time I saw it in 3D, the second time I saw it in 2D, and it was perfectly fine in 2D. The 3D and that really didn't lend anything to it except a darker image.
Mm-hmm. You know, you always bring that up, the darker image, and I've never really noticed that before except with Fright Night. And forget just the 3D, the effects in that are a little tough to stomach. But for the first time, yeah, I was a little annoyed by how dark the screen looked, probably because much of the movie takes place at night. And,
oh, man.
You know, some of their faces were legitimately, you know, had an overcast.
See, that was one of the problems with Pirates, the last Pirates movie on Stranger Tide. A lot of that movie takes place at night, and it was in 3D. And it's already a dark image because it's at night, and you're just making it even more darker because you're wearing these stupid 3D glasses. I mean, this whole year, I really don't think I've seen any good movie that was in 3D. Maybe a little bit of Transformers 3, like when they're jumping off buildings and they have these 3D cameras attached to their helmets. That was pretty cool. But outside of that, I really haven't been wowed with 3D, maybe since Avatar, and I guess a guilty pleasure here, Step Up 3D, which I did fully enjoy that being in 3D.
I've enjoyed 3D movies, but I can say that not one of them used the technology to enhance the experience whatsoever. I would have enjoyed it just as much if I had seen it for the first time in 2D.
Yeah. I think another movie like Green Lantern, since there's so much color in that movie, like greens and yellows, wearing 3D glasses to tone down the vibrancy of those colors definitely hinders that movie from being good visually. I mean, a movie has problems narratively, and you can't even take away, well, look, at least it looked cool. I mean, it didn't look cool while watching it in 3D, in my opinion. All right, so I think let's wrap up this episode of Movie Night. Where can we find you online, Perry Nemiroff?
Here's the rundown. You can find me at shakya.com, cinema1.com, comingsoon.net, and movies.com. You can also find me at Twitter. It's at P. Nemiroff, P-N-E-M-I-R-O-F-F.
And you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Rudy_Obias. That's RUDIE_OBIAS. Shakya.com, autorcast.com, and everything that is Rudy at RudyObias.com. On the next episode of Movie Night, we're going to be discussing Don't Be Afraid of the Dark, a new film produced by Guillermo del Toro, a horror film starring, I just forgot her name,
Katie Holmes
and Guy Pearce, and some wonderful little troll beings, fairies,
Emily
I feel.
Madison, give that girl some credit.
Yes, who's absolutely wonderful in the movie. So we'll be discussing Don't Be Afraid of the Dark in our next episode. Thank you so much for listening to our show. Goodbye. Nice winding road, oh, yeah. Trying to rid this load, oh, yeah. Travel both night and day, oh, yeah. So tired, could hardly pray, yeah. Jesus, my light, my guide, oh, yeah. Ever by my side, oh, yeah. So I'm walking out knocking into heaven with pride.